Often imitated, never duplicated. The one and only B. Scott. You're listening to The B. Scott Show. Get ready, love muffins.
Tripping. My first thing I'm crazy, they tell me I'm slipping. Damn it, I know that I'm wrong. Damn it, he know that I'm hard.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That was Jasmine Sullivan off her new album. And we're back with another episode of The B. Scott Show. And today's episode is a special episode because we have a special guest. And the special guest is Candace Bassett. Is it Candace Dillard Bassett of Housewives of Potomac? She is here today.
Hi. Hello, Dr. Scott, darling. How are you?
I'm good, my dear. So happy that we made it to a new year. Thank God.
Happy new year indeed. Albeit, crazy. The first week of 2021 has been insane. It's been a
How has that been for you? Because you Potomac is in close proximity to DC. So I kind of feel like you guys feel like you are part of DC too. And so tell us a little bit about that and what just happened.
We have definitely, well, I will say this. I live in the suburbs. I used to live in DC. I attended Howard University, which is right in the heart of DC in Northwest DC. I worked at the White House. I had jobs around the White House, around the Capitol. Knowing what it's like being around the Capitol and knowing how people must feel who live and work and play around that area, and to have something so heinous and disgusting happen that insurrectionists would storm our Capitol and deface, as I referred to it earlier, the beacon of democracy in our country, it's disheartening at best. It's disgusting. It puts us and our country at risk and our national security at risk in a way that we don't need right now. We have enough going on as a human race, as a country, as a society, with coronavirus and this pandemic, and an economy that is ebbing and flowing depending on the day. To have something like this happen it's awful. It's awful. And being so close to it, it doesn't help. It doesn't calm my nerves anymore. Of course, all my family and friends that know that I spend a lot of time in DC. I get waxed in DC. I get my nails done in DC. I get my hair done in DC. Sometimes I eat, I play. I have friends who live in DC. I'm a voter engagement ambassador for the Congressional Black Caucus Political Action Committee. Their office is literally behind, you can see the Capitol from the front window of the CBC PAC office, where I spend a lot of time, and I have spent a lot of time, where people that I know and love spend a lot of time. So to know that this happened in an area where anyone that I know could have been, where I could have been, is scary.
And the crazy thing about it is that, I guess, some of my love muffins probably know this about me, but after I graduated from UNC Chapel Hill, I moved to DC for about 4 or 5 years.
Oh, wow.
And I stayed in the Capitol Hill area. I did. Yeah. And, I was right by Union Station. And so it's just interesting to me. Like, I feel like something had to be amiss because you can't get close to the Capitol.
Oh,
like, you know how hard it is to get up? Like, you to get on the steps? Like, how is that possible? You know what I mean? Like, they keep you back, like, whoa. Like, even if you get too close, like, hey, sir, excuse me, sir. You know, can you please bring it back?
And said, if a Black person had gone up to ask for directions, we would have been. And it's funny. And
it's
we
funny, but it's usually how tight it is, this in general. Like, I feel like the security, they were like, I don't know for sure. I hate to go down conspiracy theories, but it kind of feels like, you know, it was an inside job because, like, how did they just get the access, you know?
And furthermore, when you look at some of his footage and you see the Capitol Police, and I'm not saying that all Capitol Police are to blame, but many are, you see them just sort of allowing these terrorists, that we have to call them what they are, they're terrorists, to just waltz into the front door of the Capitol. There was some fight, and I did see some footage of Capitol Police officers doing their duty, doing their jobs, fighting and, you know, trying to protect our Capitol. But I did see some videos as well of Capitol Police officers just allowing them to walk in, just moving the barricades.
And taking selfies with them.
And taking selfies, helping them down the stairs. And it's preposterous. Because had this been a Black Lives Matter rally, I mean, we don't even have to postulate. There was a Black Lives Matter rally, and we were treated, there was a gun line at a Black Lives Matter rally. So you cannot tell me that there isn't a clear discrepancy between the way that people who advocate for Black lives are treated when they are protesting and the way that these terrorists behaved.
Right.
You can't tell me there's not a difference.
And it's crazy because, you know, as a Black person, a person of color, we protest because we do not want to be harmed or to be murdered.
Absolutely.
They were protesting because I don't know what reason they were protesting other than the fact that they didn't like the results of the election.
Yeah, it's
privilege at its highest.
At its best. It's white privilege just rearing its disgusting, ugly head. And, you know, and it's, I would like to say that I'm always waiting for the turning point when, you know, when are the majority in this country going to finally start to see, and I think you did start to see that this summer with the Black Lives Matter movement really, you know, taking the front stage. But when is enough is enough? When are white people who benefit from white privilege, when are they all going to start to see how much of a discrepancy there is between the way that we are treated and the way that they are treated?
And to be honest, I think that Donald Trump would have been reelected had it not been for coronavirus, had it not been for, you know, him so publicly mishandling the whole situation. But that's scary to think that it took something like, you know, hundreds of thousands at this point. It's like 350,000 Americans have died from coronavirus, and it is attributable to how he has mishandled the situation. And even looking at the vaccine rollout, it's just been a shit show.
Yes.
And, you know, it just shows you that all the other stuff that he has done wasn't enough.
Right.
You know what I mean? No. It shows you, like, I don't know if it's going to be a turning point, Candace, because I just feel like there's a certain, you know, 75 million people, I believe, voted for him.
Yes.
And just a lot of people that have beliefs that are so different from the almost 80 million that voted for Biden. So I just feel like this country is divided.
Absolutely it is. And, you know, it's funny because I know personally people who voted for Trump, and I can barely look at them. I can't speak to them. People in my family, I will say that. And it hurts to even have to think about the fact that, you know, we don't matter. Marginalized people in this country, the messaging says we don't matter. And that's a hard pill to swallow in some regards. In a lot of regards, you know, you have people, one of my favorite activists, she's loud, she's brash, and I love her, Amanda Seales, has said recently that, you know, why are we surprised? Why are we shocked? You know, this is par for the course in this country. And in a lot of regards, it is. And, you know, call me naive and call me, you know, whatever you want to call me, but I want to be accepted as a part of this country, as a part of the fabric of this country. My ancestors, your ancestors, we built this country, and we come to this country, and we do have pride in this country as African Americans. We want to be seen and accepted as equal. And I speak for myself and people that I know who do. But in the same token, you know, we are jaded, and we do look at and have to side eye the system and the systemic racism that still runs rampant and dog whistles to people like these terrorists that felt like they had a right to storm our Capitol. It's hard to, I think somebody was talking about the two Americas. It's hard to rationalize these two Americas and living in this split personality of a country and not, you know, want to jump off a bridge or leave.
And, you know, it's good. I think we can segue into the Housewives of Potomac from something that you said. Because you mentioned dog whistles.
Yes.
You mentioned, you know, just your connection with being a person of color. And so how do you feel on Housewives of Potomac as a, you know, a darker skinned woman, you and Wendy, Dr. Wendy.
Address her correctly, sweetie. Yes,
she got all the degrees, honey.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so how does that, you know, factor in, you know, how do you feel that has come to play on the show? And, you know, especially, you know, during the reunion, it was brought up that, you know, because Wendy was labeled as aggressive,
right?
That was a dog whistle. You know, for people, I mean, I'm trying to get a better understanding of what you felt on the show. And just to be clear, I want you to feel that this, our interaction is, you know, I want it to be like, this is a safe space for you. Sure. I want you to feel that you can express yourself. I want you to feel that this is, there's no, nothing that I am doing is like a gotcha, you know, right. This is a discussion where I want you to feel represented. And so specifically going, you know, since you mentioned that, you know, just now, how do you feel, you know, colorism plays into the Housewives of Potomac?
Thank you for you know, asking that question and giving that a platform, because I absolutely feel that colorism runs rampant around the platform. I won't specifically call out any of my castmates, but I do believe that there are castmates who dog whistle to those who buy into colorism and who have implicit bias around colorism. And you see it, I mean, just being very frank, I've gotten death threats. Wendy has received death threats. Robin, I know, has also received death threats. But the threats that I know I have received, some of them are specifically related to my color. You black bitch, you dark bitch, you don't belong, you don't deserve the platform, et cetera, et cetera. Robin was told to die in a fire. I was told to kill myself. Wendy has received similar sentiments from fans. And there is this, this idea that myself and Wendy, who are the darker hued women on our show, are somehow deemed more aggressive and more insufferable when we have done and said some of the same things and reacted in some of the same ways as our lighter skinned counterparts and cast members on this show. Ashley, for example, made a name for herself very early on this show. And I think that she in general is very entertaining and great for the show, even though I have zero desire to have a relationship with her. I can say that she does her job on the show, but Ashley has made a name for herself being very messy, keeping up mess, starting drama, yelling, you know, screaming at people. But somehow when I do it or when Wendy does it, it's deemed more aggressive, or as Ashley referred to it, ferocious. What is ferocious about addressing an issue with a friend on the show when everyone else has done it as well? We've heard Karen refer to Robin as, you know, a dizzy bitch, and you scream at Giselle, screaming at Robin. Robin has screamed, "What is the issue?" at Ashley. Monique has physically put her hands on multiple people, or threatened to do so. But somehow I'm aggressive and I am the problem. Somehow Wendy, who just got here, has gotten this reputation as being this aggressive, insufferable, as I said, woman. And that absolutely has to do with the way that people view darker hued women over lighter hued women. And it needs to be talked about. And I think the more that we discuss it, the more we can bring it to light and perhaps have people see that maybe it is implicit bias that has you viewing someone who is darker as aggressive, and then you have an excuse for someone who's lighter skin who behaves the same way or worse. Mm.
I mean, it could be true. I mean, because I mean, it's like, it's kind of like how, you know, Black individuals are perceived, or darker complected individuals are perceived to be more of a threat by police as their, you know, lighter counterparts and or Caucasian people. Absolutely. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. That's why I asked. I wanted to know, because that was, you know, because I am familiar with all of the Housewives shows and things, but with that moment in particular was one that stuck out to me, because, you know, I always want to have a better understanding. Especially as a person that's, you know, I view myself as a person of color, but I also recognize that I am a lighter complected person. Yeah. And I want to make sure that I am doing my part and using my platform to be as conscious as possible around that, because I just didn't know that coming from North Carolina, coming from the South, I know colorism is a way that, you know, has been used in the past to divide us.
Oh yeah.
And I hate to see that happen amongst ourselves, you know?
Yes. And then it's one thing, because I'm also from the South. I was born in Biloxi. I was raised in Georgia. My family's from Alabama, so I know the South all too well. And it pains me. It's a different level. It's kind of, I guess it's embarrassing, because within the Black community, we know that we have these conversations, and we know, you know, the fight we've had with colorism. We know about brown paper bag tests and all of that. But when it is aired out on national television, you know, and it has to be talked about on national television, now we're bringing white people into this conversation. I cringe at anything that makes us as Black people, as a community, look as if we are not united. Right. And that is a huge elephant in the room that has to be discussed.
And another issue that I, right in that, I guess you guys were discussing that on the reunion, then I think Wendy had made a comment to Andy or Giselle when they were talking about her fashion that I found was like colorism too. You know, she basically was saying that, you know, Giselle gets a pass and she gets a pretty girl pass. And to me, I was equally as offended by that, because it's like, why does Giselle get a pretty girl pass for her tacky fashions when just because she's light skinned and has pretty eyes?
Yeah, that's a thing.
You know what I'm saying? Like, how is that? That's like, you know, it's like the reverse of what the colorism thing that we had just talked about on the show. Yeah. I was like, how are you then going to just say that she gets a pass, or she's getting a pass? And like, she deserves, no one, just because, I'm going to be clear, and I said this on another show, just because you're light skinned, just because you have pretty eyes, does not mean that you are beautiful, that you get a pass for anything. And it should not mean that. And I think that is something that is that slave mentality, is that, you know, being looking Western, the lighter, the better. Mm-hmm. That to me was, I was like, that also stood out. I was like, what's happening here? Yeah. Giselle doesn't get a pass because she's light skin, light eyes.
Well, I think that Wendy was I don't think that she was declaring that we're going to give Gisele a pass because she's fair skinned.
She's saying that's why.
Yes, that was her reason. And you know, there is truth to that. And Gisele is, that's not blind to Gisele or to Robin. They know that. I've had conversations with both of them, who, and both of them are, you know, educated, college educated women who grew up in families that made sure they knew, you know, who they were and what their privilege was. I know that for a fact. Mm-hmm. I mean, but Gisele is also going to be Gisele, and she was very flippant about it. Oh, well, that's, you know, that's something that, what did she say? She said,
that's good to know or something.
Right. Yeah, right. And, but that's what she's going to do. But no, it definitely is something that happens in the Black community where you have fair-skinned, light-eyed men and women who have a certain grain of hair that are seen as more angelic, more innocent, and they are given passes. And I think that is the case oftentimes on this show as well.
And so I want to just, you know, talk about this, and so we can just get to the root of it. You know, this season was a big season for you guys, in part fueled by the altercation that you had with Monique. I wanted to talk about how you guys got off track, because I remember, you know, I was going in and out of Housewives of Potomac. I would watch a couple of episodes here, a couple of episodes there. So I wasn't always well versed in how things got to where it's gotten. But I did see an episode where I thought, not too long ago, that you and Monique were friends, like y'all were friends or something. And then I was like, they went from being friends to altercation.
Right.
In your opinion, how did you get here? And, you know, where are things now with you mentally? Like, so like, you know, how did you get here? And, you know, what's your current state?
Yeah. Well, I've answered this question many times, and I don't know. I still don't know. And I've been reamed for saying that because I'm responsible, because I was provoking her and I was spreading rumors and lies. And none of that is true. I was never spreading rumors. I was spreading lies. I was never provoking anyone. If anything, I was doing the complete opposite of that. I walked away from her multiple times as she provoked me. And that's documented on the show. I have no idea what drove someone to do what they did. I have no idea. And I really have had to retire from trying to figure it out, because it's a mind fuck, and all it does is, you know, really for me, cause me to spiral into a negative space, because I don't have the answers. And I've had to resolve within myself that I'm not going to get those answers from the people that inflicted the physical drama. So I've no idea. You can ask her, and you know, on Wednesday she'll give you one answer, and then Friday and Saturday it'll be something totally different, and then Sunday it'll be something else yet again. So I don't think she knows. You know, and we can postulate and speculate, but I don't know. And I frankly have retired from trying to figure it out.
And what has been the most difficult part of the post of that, like of after the altercation, is the most difficult part that it occurred?
Yeah. I mean, obviously for anyone who's a human being, the most difficult part was seeing the lies being spread. The day after the altercation, blogs were reporting falsely that I threw a glass to initiate the fight, that I threw a bottle to initiate the fight, that I called the police, all kinds of crazy things. And you've seen it. Everybody has seen, you know, the barrage of different versions of the story. For me, that was really hard to deal with. And you see me kind of like bubble over at the reunion when I had to get up and get the hell off of the stage because I could not sit and listen to someone with a straight face lie about the chain of events, about the chronology of events. I didn't know this about myself, but I can't deal with people who just blatantly flat out lie. Like it's sociopathic. And I can deal with a lot of things. Like I can fight with Ashley all day because she's just gonna throw shade and I'll throw shade right back. I can deal with, you know, the likes of most people. But I draw the line at someone who will physically attack me and then look me in my face and tell me that I initiated the attack.
So you feel that during the reunion, they showed a clip of you swooping in, that the hand gesture did occur. You feel as though that still was not enough to justify what happened after.
No, because she said I swiped under her chin. My hand was not under her chin. Hand was not under her chin. And that was what, the fourth or fifth reason behind me spreading rumors. She said in another interview that it was my energy that caused her to do what she did. Then it was she was angry about the rumors that caused her to do what she did. At first it was I threw a glass that caused her to initiate the fight. So this was just another reason that she came up with after sitting for a year with the footage and studying the footage and coming up with this 15th reason as to why I was responsible for her physically attacking me.
And you guys got the footage because it was subpoenaed, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Because I wondered that too. I was like, wow, they are really prepared about what, you know, what is on the footage. Yes. Because I guess that's part of the legal proceedings that it was subpoenaed and that's why she knew it was there.
She blacked out, remember?
It's been many different things that have been read about why or said about why things have taken place. I just wonder how it would be because that's a part of the reason why years ago I said no to Love and Hip Hop because I'm not built for physical altercations or people, you know, I'm just not built for any, like, I just can't, no. I don't do loud talking, people loud talking to me, also touching me, throwing drinks on me. Yeah. It's not my MO.
Well, so then, what happened on our show that belongs on Love and Hip Hop. So, you know, there was a miscasting that happened. In going on Love and Hip Hop, if you know that that's not the kind of behavior that you want to engage in, then yes, you made the right decision to not go on that show. I would have never joined this show had I known I was joining a show with someone who was about fighting. Housewives is about verbal sparring. It's about verbal altercations. It's about how well can you use your words to be shady and argue. And if you look at some of these white girls, you know, they like to crack glasses on tables and throw plates and do all that. We don't do that. But the fighting, the physical part, that was never something that I would have signed up for. If I knew that that's what Housewives was about, I would have been sitting right here on my couch.
Yeah. And I mean, for me, it would be, I guess a part of what you felt too was just the fact that you were, what the altercation also was not putting our community and Black women, people of color in the best light either. Absolutely. Especially during a time period where we do have all this Black Lives Matter and things, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's what a juxtaposition. We watch a show where we're literally fighting, you know, and slamming each other.
Hair and threatening to kill people. And, you know, and then I didn't help the situation with me, you know, screaming and calling her names. Mm-hmm. I own that. I'm not and proud
her
of
her. Drag me, right? I think that's what was said.
Yes. Me quoting her threatening to drag me in.
Oh, okay. So she said, I'm going to drag you, or don't make me drag you. And then you said, Is that what you're saying? You said, yes. Well, drag me then. Okay.
Yes, that is. And that should be cleared up. And it's, you know, I'm really tired of talking about this entire situation, but it should be said that I didn't come up with the phrase drag me. We have to, if you watch the show in season 4, I was having a conversation with Karen that Monique walked into while pregnant, and it became aggressive because she started screaming at me. And I told her to go back over to where her friends were. And she said, don't tell me where to go. I will drag you pregnant and all. My response to that was, oh, okay. You want to drag? So am I supposed to just run away or cry and cower when someone, a pregnant woman, is telling me she wants to beat me up and hit me in the face with a glass bottle, which she also said. But everyone forgets that. They just want to call me a provoker and say that I brought that on myself. No, I was repeating what this violent person said to me in a previous conversation.
And what do you feel about the next season that's coming up? What do you feel that you need in regards to feeling like you can continue to shoot with these ladies? Like, you know, where are you at in your thought process about that? And I mean, I saw recently Monique said that she is not returning to the show. I wanted to just know your thoughts on that and the whole situation of who's coming back. You know, are you excited? You know, where you are mentally?
Yeah. I cannot confirm or deny whether I will be back. If I am asked back and I decide to come back, I feel great about the trajectory of the show. I feel like, if everyone is returning, I'm okay with everyone. Obviously I have my qualms with certain people, but you know, in a group, you're always going to have some issues.
You're okay with everyone except Monique, but you're saying everyone outside of her because she said she's not coming back. Is that what you meant?
Correct. Yes. Okay. Yes. So, and there, you know, who knows if we all come back, there could be other people added to the cast. I've heard all kinds of rumors about, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 new housewives. And
well, you can't trust those rumors unless they come from me.
Yeah. You certainly cannot. Yes. So yeah, I'm excited about my future as a whole. Cool. With the show, if there is a show, and my life outside of the show, which is much fuller and much more interesting, if you ask me.
Yeah. And you are, you know, you are a singer and you're an actress. And tell us a little bit about that. Tell us about, you had a song recently that came out. Brian, I think we have a clip, right? Come on, Go-Go Beat. Yes.
Yes, you know it. Yeah. I don't know what heals a heart or where to start to describe how much I love you. I don't know what's wrong.
Yes, I could feel that. I love me a good old go-go beat now.
Right, yep. Yes, you're a DMV lover, yes.
Yeah. So tell us about that single. Tell us about what else you're trying to do in terms of music, acting projects. I see a couple here listed on the piece of paper I'm looking at. Like, tell us, like, tell people, like, hey, let us know what else is going on with Candace outside of what they've seen this season.
Yes. So that song, I See You, the remix, was a remix to an R&B ballad that I wrote for my husband when we got married. And I performed it at our wedding. The remix was produced by Chucky Thompson, who, if you know the 90s R&B realm and or DMV producers, Chucky Thompson is a wizard. He has worked with and produced for Mary J. Blige, Nas, Biggie, Faith, Usher, everyone who has written a song to, you know, the soundtrack to our lives in the 90s R&B. So he produced, and it also features Big G from Backyard Band. If you're familiar again with DMV, Backyard is a huge go-go group in DC, and it features Uno, who also helped produce on the project. So I have to shout out those gentlemen out. Shout out to them.
Shout out.
Yes, yes. So yeah, so I'm working on an EP slash it could be an LP. We're still kind of deciding how many songs we're going to put on the project, but I've been in and out of the studio for the last few months. I'm actually getting ready to go back in a few weeks. Right now I think I have 7 or 8 songs that are amazing, produced by some incredible people, vocal produced by some incredible people, just people that you wouldn't even believe that have worked with, you know, the Rihannas of the world, the Beyoncés of the world. And now they are working with me. So I'm still kind of in awe.
That's exciting.
The team. Yeah. The team that I have is crazy. And they're funny, they're fun, they work hard, and we're getting this done. We have chosen the next single, which should be coming out very soon. I'm really excited about it because it really, for me, it encompasses what this year has been for not just me, but for everyone. We all have experienced some sort of loss, whether it was a loved one, a job, your sanity, your sense of identity. Everyone has lost in some way over the last year in 2020. So this single it really addresses that, and it's a pick me up that I think we all need, and it reminds us that we can all win no matter what. So I'm really excited about my new single.
To hear that. I mean, we need some positivity and upliftment.
Yes. And then, you know, it was 2021 started with a bang, honey.
It did.
We definitely need.
Somebody said, just like 2020 just went in the back and changed the wig.
Listen, we're what? December 37th? 2020? That's what somebody said. I was like, yeah, that's pretty accurate. So I'm excited. And then my music is definitely has an R&B bass, but I like to kind of dabble in a little bit of pop, a little bit of rock. So I'm excited to kind of give you all levels with my project. And I'm really excited about just having you all, everybody here. People have been asking on Twitter, on social media, we need music. And I'm really excited to bring everybody some good music. And then if you love Christmas movies as much as I do, you might've seen me in BET's The Christmas Lottery that came out over the Christmas holiday. And that was starring Reginald Vell Johnson, who everybody knows as one of our favorite TV dads from Family Matters, myself, Brave Williams, and Asia Epperson. That was shot mostly right here in the DMV. Shout out to Octet Productions, our amazing production company that made that all possible. So I was really excited to see myself on the television screen on BET. We had a little miniature watch party here, and people are still watching it and texting me and saying that they just saw the movie, which is funny.
And you're also in Netflix's Family Reunion too, right?
Yes. So Family Reunion season 2 comes out. It should be coming out very soon. They had to pause production because of COVID. That stars Tia Mowry and Loretta Devine, Richard Roundtree. I was honored to be able to be on the Paramount lot, on set with an all Black cast, Black writers. It was surreal and so much fun. I didn't think that I liked comedy as much but just being on a sitcom set and being just even at a table read for a sitcom, for a family show like this was so much fun. My character is this sort of pretentious French woman named Sunita Chanel, and she's she's ridiculous. But it was so much fun. And then there are a couple of other projects that I'm working on. I'm getting ready to shoot a pilot very soon. And I'm open to any and everything. I'm just excited to be able to express myself through the medium of acting.
Well, yay. And I hope that you felt that you were able to come here today and express yourself and talk with me and have a good old time. And I wish you nothing but the best. And, you know, we'll see how everything plays out on the next season of The Housewives of Potomac. And please send that single over to me when you get a chance. I would love to hear it.
Yes, I would love for you to hear it.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by. It was an absolute pleasure. And you have a blessed year. And of course, double kisses. Bye-bye. Yes. Thank you so much for listening to The B. Scott Show. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube at Love B. Scott. And make sure you review the show on iTunes. And you can always find me on lovebscott.com.